Greetings, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Ian Punnett in for George Norrie tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And to the hostile invading alien armies hovering silently just outside Earth's atmosphere, hiding behind their cloaking devices, remember, eat the Canadians first if you can get through our battle bots, that is. We're going to be talking about robots tonight. And for me, my main interest these days is going to be robots in space. We have an expert on the subject. Martin Ford has written two books. One is Rise of the Robots. That was back in 2015. And then the new book, Rule of the Robots, which landed him on Coast to Coast a little while back. But I have a particular interest because just this week for IGI Global, which is an international publishing firm, I turned in, along with my co-author, Dr. Phyllis West Johnson of San Jose State University, we turned in our manuscript for a book about the future of journalism. It's called From Wasteland to Wonderland, and we kind of track journalism sometime into the future. I believe in the subtitle of the book, we agreed on 2040 to 2070 is the area that is kind of our sweet spot. So not that far into the future, but far enough that we really can only anticipate. We can't accurately predict what things will be like. And one of the large variables will involve robots. In particular, how robots will be informative to us, performative to human beings, and how robots in the near future are going to encounter a kind of crossroads. Martin Ford has been studying this idea and working with other scientists around the country for his new book, Rule of the Robots, is exactly how far can AI go, right? Artificial intelligence has a huge place in the trajectory of humankind. And it all has to do with just how do we define artificial intelligence? I mean, do we say a vacuum cleaner is artificially intelligent because, you know, our little iRobot can scurry around the floor and vacuum and bump into things and not knock anything over and not eat socks and whatever? Do we say that that is intelligent? Or are we going to add in the criterion that artificial intelligence has to mean to some degree, some amount of self-learning? That it's going to be able to accumulate its own knowledge, much like any human being would, as it continues to exist. I can't say live, but exist. And then the real question is, will we have to turn off, can we turn off the self-learning aspect of AI before it's too late? And by too late, I don't mean necessarily Skynet. That's one way of looking at it. I'm more interested in just how badly things could go on other planets and what it will say to us if we make robots our slaves. And that's where we'll start coming up next on a fun Friday night with open lines later on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. You know, Martin Ford, it would be fair, more fair, if I had in some way told you that you are being summoned to the radio for your expertise tonight. And I'm probably going to throw you some curves, but I have no doubt they're in your strike zone. So thank you for agreeing to be a guest on again so soon after the release of your book and the last time you were on Coast to Coast.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. So I'm very interested in information robots. We'll put a pin in that for the time being. And I'll ask you to give a quick synopsis of the most recent book Rule of the Robots that just came out in, was it September of this year?
Yeah, it was. So Rule of the Robots, and the subtitle of that book is How Artificial Intelligence Will Transform Everything. And really, it's a book about artificial intelligence, which will, you know, it impacts as physical robots that can do, you know, things that manipulate the environment, but also just as software that has intelligence that can solve problems and learn and so forth. And I genuinely believe this is going to be our most important technology going forward. It's going to be a technology that truly shapes the world. I think it's going to touch every aspect of our life, our culture, our economy. In many ways, I think it will, you know, AI will come to be like electricity in the sense that it will just be ubiquitous. It will be everywhere. It will touch everything.
Right.
And of course, if you lose your electricity for a day, it has a huge impact on your life. And the same would be true of the applications of artificial intelligence that we're going to deploy. So I think it's truly going to be a critical technology,
yep.
And it will have many, many upsides, benefits, and also many dangers and risks that come with it.
Well, I think with the term I would use here in this case, in the comparison to electricity, is turnkey. It's just going to be, there's going to be an expectation. And much like turning on an oven, that it will get hot. That we will have this sort of casual relationship with the function of artificial intelligence. But I want to start there because I know that even the definition by some of artificial intelligence is kind of contested territory. What exactly, how do you define artificial intelligence versus just a car engine? Why wouldn't we say a car engine is an example of artificial intelligence?
Right. I define it very simply as being a machine or a software system that can solve the kinds of problems that human beings solve, you know, using our brains. And the most important aspect of that, at least right now, is the ability to learn. The AI applications that we have, often called machine learning, do have this ability to learn. When you were doing your introduction earlier, you mentioned the Roomba robot, right?
Yeah.
Now, that robot can learn. It does learn. It learns the dimensions of the rooms in your house that it's going to vacuum, right? Every house is different. You don't have to buy a different robot depending on how big the rooms in your house are. It learns that for itself. It explores and makes a map of the room, and then based on that can vacuum very efficiently. So that's
I don't know that I would agree with that. And so this is one of those reasons why I'm stepping in, because I think when we say learn, it reacts. But is it really learning in that if I turn it off and turn it back on again, it's going to retain knowledge?
I believe
the
so.
Room?
I don't have one personally, but yes,
it doesn't.
My expectation is that it would. I don't think that it's the case that every time you turn the Roomba on, it's just going around randomly, bouncing.
It is. I think it is. Because you can, this is why I think it's important that we really hit on these definitions and we try to understand them moving forward, because I'm not sure that a Roomba is any more of an example of artificial intelligence than, say, a bumper car, which will hit something, bounce off, go in a different direction, bounce off, go in a different direction. It's kind of like a bumper car with a vacuum cleaner attached to it, which is a synthesis, which is interesting. But it's part of why I think we get into, I'm afraid of some rabbit holes on this conversation, because as you know, many other of your colleagues or people like Elon Musk and others of your contemporaries would say that we overemphasize when we say artificial intelligence as opposed to just really smart machines.
Well, I mean, I think those two terms mean more or less the same thing. And there's no doubt that artificial intelligence has been hyped. And, you know, people like Elon Musk have made big promises that in terms of self-driving cars and so forth that have not yet been realized. It's going to take longer to get to, for example, cars that can really drive themselves and so forth. But going back to the Roomba, I've never, you know, owned one or used one. I mean, have you? Have you actually?
Yeah. I have two of them.
Okay. Well, I can't speak that to that specifically, but
yeah.
I can tell you that many other robots use similar technologies and they can learn and they
yes.
can learn to navigate, right? I mean, that's
yes.
what
yeah, I that's what I'm separating out, though. And now this is why I say this, because you're exactly right when we're talking about truly the idea of self-learning, self-educating, knowledge-retaining robots who can do just like what you said, that they can problem solve without us giving it input, right?
Exactly. That they can learn from the environment, from data. So perhaps the Roomba isn't very advanced, but definitely there are many other real robots,
yes.
artificial intelligence is really all about the ability to learn. So for example, there are robots in hospitals that do deliveries, and they learn the route, through the corridors, which door to go through, and so forth. Same thing with hotels. There are robots that can deliver things to your room in a hotel. So these are machines that absolutely do learn, right? They learn from the environment, and they learn how to navigate within buildings. So that's just one example of it. But there are many examples of
right.
algorithms that can learn. I mean, that's
right.
what really is powering all of this.
And I think that idea of algorithms that can learn, one of the things that we have as an example of that is these robo-writers that people may not even be aware of how much within certain companies and on certain subjects, robots are writing the news. That a robot program, an algorithm, a sophisticated algorithm, will scan data and then be able to write a rudimentary paragraph 2, 3, 4 that would express that data in an expository form, right? Using rules that have been pre-fed on rhetoric, but can then learn along the way and become essentially more sophisticated in the way in which it's communicating. We know this is already here. And so I think that's right in right to your point. Would you not agree?
Yeah, exactly. All the big media organizations, Bloomberg and so forth, use these kinds of systems. And what they do is, as you say, they look at data, they can figure out what's interesting, what's the story in that data, and then they can generate a story, and you can read one of those stories online, and you won't know that it was written by a machine and not
no.
by a human being. You won't be able to tell. And
right.
In fact, everyone that's listening has probably encountered those and not realized it.
Not even realized it. Yeah.
And those are going to get better and better. Right now, they're most commonly used in areas that are fairly formulaic, like financial reporting
yeah.
for companies, how much earnings for the company.
Right.
Sports reporting, they're used a lot for that because you can, with the basic facts of a game, you can put together into a narrative. And it's not just journalism. They're used in many kinds of applications where you
yep.
need to do basic writing. I know they're used to generate real estate descriptions. Like,
yeah.
If you go by a real estate office, you'll see these, a description of a house with a photo there, and it'll tell you about the house that's for sale. Those can be generated automatically based on just the basic facts about the house. So,
yep.
There are many, many applications for this, and they're going to get better and better.
Yeah, I think you are 100% correct. When we hire a first or second year grad out of college and we have him or her write a story, it may not be fundamentally different in any way than a robo journalist program would do, and they would look in the end very, very much like a variation of each other, just a basic information slightly different, but the word choice, and especially when you're communicating straight data, you want to limit the amount of expression that goes into something like that.
Yeah, but they would definitely become much more sophisticated, going forward. They already are getting better. And as you mentioned, in many cases, they can match or even outperform an entry-level employee. So I do think going forward, this will begin to have an impact on jobs and maybe in particular entry-level jobs, right?
Right.
As you say, people coming right out of school, because very often you hire those people to do more routine, repetitive, predictable types of things. And those are the kinds of things that, AI and robots are the best at.
But, and I think this is an important safeguard, because I think it's a curb that we need to, we need to differentiate between what's real and what's Hollywood, and the robots as they are portrayed in the Iron Man series that you know have different personalities and react with audio and seemingly have their feelings hurt and other things like that. That's a ways away, and I understand that you know that there are these Japanese cyborg type robots that become human facsimiles, and we will react differently perhaps to that than we would if it were just an elaborate bolt cutter, you know, or some kind of welding unit from a robot factory floor. And so, but some of that may really just be our imagination. That really comes right down to it. They aren't any different. Just because we put a human face on it and some sort of rubbery skin, it really isn't any more sophisticated or more human-like than the robots that are on the factory floor all over the country right now.
Yeah, that's true. And as you say, it's going to be a long time before we have the kind of robots or artificial intelligence that you see in science fiction movies. I mean, that's
right.
What it is.
Okay, but that's the
minimum decades away, maybe 50 right. years, maybe even 100 years away.
There you go.
So the humanoid robots you see now, you know, the robots that look like people are, for the most part, they're kind of gimmicks.
Right.
You know, they're done almost like puppets, right?
And yeah.
They can do some very basic
right.
things. But the problem with robots of this kind so far is that they can't really do much in the way of useful things. So I think it's going to be a long time before we all have robots at home, you know, that are going around doing all kinds of things, because that's really a big, big technical challenge. But it's going to be a very different story in workplaces. You know, inside an Amazon warehouse, they've already got a lot of robots, and those robots
sure.
get way better. That's going to have a huge,
right.
very real impact. But of course, those robots look absolutely nothing like people, right? I mean, they're not; they're just functional machines.
So, this to me is where the rubber hits the road when you said 50 years into the future, because the book I just co-edited. I didn't. I only wrote about 15% of it or so on the bookends of the preface and the introduction and conclusion, and the rest of it's done by a series of sci-fi writers and specialists in fields. And one of those has been kind of haunting me since I read the chapter. And in effect, it is also perhaps not new ground, in that some of this was addressed in movies like Blade Runner. But we do have an interesting problem coming up, I think, when it comes to self-learning robots. And I want your reflection on this. Is if we go into space, we will very likely any type of colonization, if we effectively, as Elon Musk wants to do and others do, want to start to build a colony on the moon or a factory in zero gravity that would make certain products that can't be made here on Earth. If we get to that point, the human to robot ratio is going to be way higher than it is here on Earth, because there will be many fewer humans, because that takes a lot of support to keep humans alive in space at that point, and many more robots to support those fewer humans. Do you accept that proposition?
Sure, robots of all kinds. And in fact, if you look at what NASA has done, I mean, basically the spacecraft they're launching are in fact robots, right? I mean, we you know,
right.
the ratio of those unmanned robotic space flights to, you know, manned, you know, with people aboard, which we haven't even had in a long time, from NASA is, you know, much higher. And I think that's probably the future for the most part.
So,
you know, in many cases, there's no reason at all to have people there.
But if we're going to have self-learning true artificial intelligence that is sophisticated and has that component that we started with, that in order for it to really be defined as artificial intelligence, it has to be able to either learn from other programs without human intervention or self-teaching. And be able to make a series and retain information just like any growing human would on all sorts of binary circumstances that we run into. Hot stove, cold stove. We have to change our behavior around a different, right? A different cold stove or a hot stove. We would change our behavior between a thunderstorm and a snowstorm. And robots themselves will be kind of heading in that way. If they're going to self-learn, environment is going to have to be part of it. But then this becomes the really tricky part. And this is where I want to pick up with you coming up in just a minute. At what point will self-learning robots become self-aware? And that at what point could we ever expect to have to give robots civil rights? Not human rights, but civil rights. Lest we replicate the horrors of slavery in our past. I'll get back to that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, since I finished editing this book, which drops at the end of the month, I co-edited a book. I did not write much of it, but it's a very interesting book about the future of journalism called From Wasteland to Wonderland. And it has to do with journalism essentially in the next 50 years. I can't help but feel differently every time I look up at the moon, because our colonization of the moon is coming soon. They will start small. There will be a financial incentive. There's lots of evidence that says that this could be a self-determining colony. It would be one that would be self-sustaining to a degree. It wouldn't require regular shipments. That everything about it at some point will probably become the focus of Earth, much in the same way that the first lunar landing did when we were all much younger, or not even born yet. But I know how I felt when I was 9, you know, and we were going to be on the moon. You couldn't stop looking up at the moon going, there's people up there. And it's going to be like that again. And yet the way that these communities will become sustainable, both on the moon and other planets, will be because of robots. And if we become dependent on robots to take care of us, and they are self-learning robots, what are the rules we have to be mindful of now? And how would that reflect our lack of humanity if we create robots that become essentially self-learning and self-aware, but we deny them a type of citizenship and we regulate them in ways that serve us only, much in a kind of robo-apartheid? I'll get back to that conversation with Martin Ford in just a moment. We're talking with Martin Ford. His new book is Rule of the Robots, and you can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. Rise of the Robots, not quite 10 years old, but a book which was predictive in its own way at a time when some people didn't think more than in a science fiction-y kind of way about the future of robotics. So, Martin, that's my problem lately. Every time I look up at the moon, every time I look up at the stars, I think about our future colonization, which is coming, our future dependence on robots for us to be able to survive under those circumstances, which is coming. And then how do we keep self-learning, self-aware robots from demanding civil rights, demanding different treatment than we would, say, a Roomba or a car engine?
Right. I mean, those are good, important questions. The thing is, though, that I do think that they're pretty far in the future. I think that the first thing we have to do before we need to worry about concerns like robots having civil rights or whether we're enslaving them is to achieve what's called artificial general intelligence, or human-level AI. And we really are very far away from that. We already have, you know, self-learning robots or self-learning algorithms, but these algorithms can learn to do very, very specific things. You know, they can be very proficient at recognizing faces,
right?
For example, or as you said, writing a news article. They can do these very, very narrow, specific things. But we're very far from building a machine that has general human-type intelligence, where you can think generally, you can reason, you have common sense, you can learn something in one situation, and then you can apply what you've learned in a different situation. You know, machines are very far from that kind of general intelligence. So it's not a situation that we're going to confront anytime soon, but maybe after, you know, decades, 50 years or something, we will achieve that, and that will be an enormously important breakthrough. Now, when that happens, there's another question is, will a machine that is generally intelligent like a human be conscious? You know, will it have, you know, not just self-awareness in the sense of knowing that it exists, but will it have a kind of inner experience like a human being has? You know, will it have a vantage point inside its mind where it sees itself? And no one knows the answer to that. You know, there's a lot of debate over that. Some people think that if you achieve intelligence, then consciousness comes along automatically. Other people think that those two things are completely independent. So you could have a very smart machine that was basically like a zombie, you know, that wasn't really, in a sense, it didn't have a life force within it, that the lights are off, you know, it's not really anything happening inside other than the fact that it's solving problems.
But right there, if it can solve a problem, maybe that's where I catch, and I'm not saying this is specific to you, but even within the community that's having this discussion, that seems like a contradiction. If it can solve a problem, it can assess a problem and then resolve it, then, and we're going to call that artificial intelligence. That's what qualifies it as artificial intelligence. Then I think the parallel exists for us to say, well, okay, somebody who has a 65 point IQ is also given civil rights just as much as somebody with 165 point IQ. And so we don't distinguish on the basis of how smart they are. We might consider some person a savant, that they might even be, you know, mentally disabled, special needs, but they still have human rights. And so they may not, it already may be that some robots can perform functions that come at a higher level than many human beings already have, or are capable of, who already have human rights. And so the overlap is not, I mean, I would argue, and this is part of the reason why I said at the very beginning, I was going to throw you a curve, but I promised you they were going to be in your wheelhouse, this is when we can't predict. We can say, well, that's so far in the future, we don't have to worry about it. But then what if it comes faster than we think? What if there's a few breakthroughs that come through faster than anybody anticipated? Then what?
No, I mean, that's definitely possible. I mean, no one really can predict how fast this is going to unfold. I mean, the comparison to a human being with you know, this mentally disabled or something, I mean, I think that person, we treat them like a human being because they are a human being, right?
Right.
Their civil rights come from their humanity. It's not based on their level of intelligence. So I do think that for a machine, the standard is going to be higher, right? No one is going to believe that a machine is a being that deserves some kind of rights unless it can, you know, demonstrate to us that it appears to act in a way that is, you know, functionally equivalent to a human being in terms of the way it thinks, the way it views itself. It's going to have to at least be able to tell us a story to make us believe that there's some consciousness there that deserves being protected. And that's something that, again, is really science fiction. We have no idea what that's going to look like or how it might play out.
But as somebody who's in conversation with futurists,
questions there.
But somebody who's in conversation with futurists, again, we were already talking about robots that can tell a story. So if we're going to say the criterion is that they have to be able to tell a story, we already have that.
So, yes, but these are robots or systems that tell a story based on learning some data.
Great.
Themselves.
But how different is that from us?
Well, you know, a human being can tell a story about themselves. They can describe who they are. They can carry out a conversation with you that demonstrates that they're human, right? I mean, that's what's called the Turing test, is this idea that if we someday have a machine that is indistinguishable from a human being when you have a chat conversation with it, say, then maybe that's a pretty good indication that we finally achieved, you know, human level artificial intelligence. But we're not there yet.
Okay, you know, but even right there, though, and just to back that up a little bit, we already have laws on the books right now that say it's not about that. When we say inhumane treatment, it's our own humanity that's being judged, not the humanity of the object. Because if we mistreat an animal, if we treat an animal inhumanely, it's not a reflection of the animal's status as a human, but our status as humans.
Right, but an animal is a conscious being. I mean, you know, or at least higher animals, you know, dogs and cats and things like that. They do have consciousness, right? They have general intelligence.
But they can't tell a story.
Dogs and cats in the general sense, are much smarter than any AI we've built.
That's fine, but they can't tell a story. They're not. We know. I mean, I love dogs. I miss my dog, Jack, tremendously, but he was probably the least self-aware creature I've ever known. And the fact that, I mean, every second it was new again, you know, he didn't really learn well. And yet he would, we never would judge on the basis of it's okay to be inhumane to stupid animals. We just say it's always wrong to be inhumane to animals.
Right. And so I do think that, you know, I mean, the reality here is that we accord animals a certain status because they are very similar to us, right? We recognize our, you know, something that is very, very much akin to us in a dog or a cat. It's not that far from
but
we
recognize that in them much in the same way that we recognize us in those Japanese cyborgs that we spoke of a half hour ago. And that's the difference between a robot that is made to bring out our sympathies or to help us make a connection to it as opposed to a welding unit from the factory floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but that's the impact on us, right? So you can build a robot that looks like a person, and it will have an emotional impact on us, and that may, in a sense, trick us into believing that robot is in a sense, alive in some way and has this status as a being, but that doesn't mean it's true, right? I mean, you've probably seen the videos of the Spot robot from Boston Dynamics with the,
yep.
You know, the robot that runs around kind of, and looks like a dog. And there were many instances, you know, in these videos, they would kick the dog and knock it down, the robotic dog, and it would get back up again and things. And many people were very angry about that. They felt that, you know, you're mistreating this robotic dog, but in fact, it's really just a machine that can't feel anything at this point. The day may come when it is more than that, but I think that's a long way off.
Okay. Would you agree? And again, thank you for being such a great conversation partner on this. I know I'm grilling you, but I needed to do this after all of the editing I was doing on these chapters where we're talking about artificial intelligence and it's our humanity at stake, not whether or not our robots actually achieve humanhood. They can't, but could they achieve a kind of personhood, which is our goal? So the fact that they would be achieving something that we're trying to get them to achieve, because it would be, say, in space, the only way we could survive is for every one person to have, you know, some confederation of robots around them that would sustain their life. I go back to something which is an unpleasant conversation, but really, how long ago was it when slaves were not thought of as being fully human? There was no such thing as mistreating a slave. That it was inconceivable that a human being of a certain color or a background, Native Americans even, that they weren't afforded human rights. They certainly didn't have civil rights, but they weren't even given human rights. They were given two-thirds of a right, even according to the Constitution. And so that's where I would like to think that we have learned our lessons from history. I'm afraid that we haven't actually sorted out on this planet exactly what we mean about all of these things, and we would be merely exporting our problems to a new surface, a new planetary surface, without resolving them here first. And we would be essentially like a virus. We would be sending that kind of injustice into new worlds. But this time has to do with robots. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are valid questions, and there definitely are people thinking about those questions. Should a robot have human rights or the rights equivalent to a human? Is it wrong to enslave robots? These kinds of questions. But again, these are not issues until a robot becomes conscious and self-awareness, until it's an entity that can suffer, right? I mean, right now a robot can. A robot that exists today is no different than your washing machine. I mean, are you abusing your washing machine if you use it too often? Do you think it suffers? Is it in pain? The robots we have today are no different than that in terms of...
Except that I'm not teaching my washing machine to get smarter.
Right? Yeah, maybe your Roomba has got... Maybe it's conscious, actually, right? And it knows what's going on. But I think that's extraordinarily unlikely based on all...
Let me just say, my wife thinks that's true. She loves the... She loved the Roomba. She loves our Roombas more than she loved our dog. And I'm not exaggerating. She loves that Roomba. She has a name for it. I'm nuts, but I'm with you. But here, again, comes down to an essential question. Then I'm not teaching my washing machine to become self-learning. And that's the danger. When we start robots...
I get what you're saying, but...
Yeah.
But again, we are doing research and making progress toward that ultimate goal, perhaps achieving at least human level intelligence and maybe consciousness. But again, we're not, as we get close to that point, then perhaps we need to worry that we're going to go over that line suddenly.
I think we need to worry about that line 50 years before we get to that point. So maybe if that's the subtext of my argument, it's that we need to sort it out now. Because we do too much kicking of the can down the road as it is. And then suddenly we'll deal with it later. And next thing you know, we're the Borg, right? We're just, we're moving across the universe with our own kind of horror, I think. But listen, you're doing so wonderfully, and thank you for being such a good sport on this. There are other issues of rule of the robots, and we'll get to those coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.